Welcome to today's interview. I've got in studio with me a hero of health freedom for America, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Her website is drtenpenny.com. There it is, drtenpenny.com. And she joins me in studio today to talk about her new book and so much more. Welcome, Dr. Tenpenny.
Thank you so much to see you in person. I always see you through Zooms or something, you know?
I know it's been several years since we've seen each other in person. You look great. Your research is phenomenal. I just want our audience to know that I think you do the most research of anybody in this movement, of anybody, in terms of backing your conclusions, like the mechanisms of injury that you're very well known for. You documented scientifically every mechanism of injury of the COVID vaccines. How many mechanisms have you identified, by the way?
Well, actually, I stopped at 40 because I figured that was enough.
Yeah, right.
If we already know 40 different ways this can make you chronically sick or kill you, I think that another 40 wouldn't matter.
Right. I agree. But you arrived at these conclusions about vaccines, though, through meticulous research.
Yeah, early on. I mean, the COVID jabs were released in December of 2020 and early in 21. And I did the 40 mechanisms of injury in May of 21. So by that period of time, I had already identified 20 mechanisms of injury. And bad planning on my part, we did the webinar on Mother's Day weekend.
I remember that. I do remember that.
Yeah. And a lot of people went, oh, I can't see it. Can you do it again? Can you do it again? So we rescheduled it for July. And between May and July of 21, I found an additional 20 mechanisms of injury. So there were 40. And it was interesting because nobody else was talking about that at that point in time. And it's been interesting from 21 through 25 to see all these papers come out, like they're with big accolades and all this stuff. Look what we found. And it's like, yeah, I found that back in 21.
Right, right. So. And your mechanisms of injury have really proven to be true. You know, sadly, we all pray for those who have been injured or killed by these vaccines. You tried to prevent it. I did too. But I've even noticed that even in the last 6 months, for example, my overseas R&D teams that were working on our AI engine, Enoch, many of them got sick, hospitalized, and had to stop working, I believe, because of vaccines. I mean, it's affecting young people. And it's very disrupting not only to their lives, but also to those of us who are hiring them. I have never seen this level of sickness and hospitalization in people in their 20s and 30s before.
Well, and that's where the turbo cancers are mostly kicking in. I mean, we're seeing cancers in young people, like really young people, like 8, 10, 12-year-old. And the cancers that we're seeing, the turbo cancers we're seeing in that age group, are generally cancers that you see in more elderly adults, like adults in their 50s and 60s, like breast cancer and colon cancer, and even 12 and 14-year-olds with prostate cancer.
What?
Yes, we've actually been reports of that. And so I'd heard a video, this is a few months ago now, from an oncologist who's probably about my age. And he said, I have never seen colon cancer in 8-year-olds before, like what we're seeing now. And, you know, for your audience, you know, the definition of a turbo cancer, you've probably talked about this before, but it means that from the time it's diagnosed until it's stage 4 and you die is so short that they can't even properly stage it, and not even really any time for any chemotherapy or any radiation or even natural therapies or whatever they're going to do. It happens so fast. I frequently tell about a young man that was in my community that played in a soccer tournament on Friday. By Monday, over the weekend, he didn't feel well. He had a low-grade fever. By Monday, his mom took him to the doctor, who just got a simple CBC, found he had leukemia, really advanced leukemia, and he was dead on Friday.
What?
And so, like, within 1 week, that's how fast these turbo cancers are killing people.
So part of this whole agenda involved heavy, heavy censorship.
Oh, for sure.
Now, I believe you were named as one of the so-called Dirty Dozen.
The disinformation dozen.
Yeah, the disinformation dozen.
Right.
But since that day, what has come out in the last, I would say, couple of years is, you know, proof that this was a government-run censorship operation In fact, you know, my company has sued the DOD and sued elements of the government and big tech, but they laundered the censorship through overseas NGOs out of the UK, for example, which then ordered big tech in America to censor voices like yours. Now, you and I know that that censorship ultimately costs people their lives.
Absolutely.
So censorship is a form of complicity in mass murder.
Yes, it is. And we just filed a, the disinformation there, I think there are 8 of the 12 of us.
Right.
We just filed a big lawsuit with the government about violation of our 1st, 4th, and 14th Amendment rights, and also tortuous interference with contracts. Like, I'm still permanently banned from PayPal. And we found a document that a congressman had set this up, that we needed to be defunded. Uh-huh. And there was a whole list of like 12 or 14 other congresspeople that had signed it. And the first time I even had ever seen that was in our lawsuit that we filed against the government. Because I was always wondering, how did they go after PayPal? How did they make that stop? And they took all the money out of our PayPal accounts and never returned it, and then stopped us from using. And to this day, I can't even set up a sub account with one of my other companies through the company. And the problem with that at the beginning, it may sound like no big deal to the listener, but I have a lot of virtual employees, and that's how we were paying them, and that's how we were getting paid from a lot of our products. And so we had to scramble, because the banks, you know, even when you try to use Zelle or Wise or things like that, you have a maximum amount at a time that you can send out over a monthly basis. Sure. It took several months. It was really dicey of what they did. And I'm still permanently banned from Podbean. In fact, you know, Podbean is a podcast hosting server. And on the very day that I got an autoresponder from Podbean that said, congratulations, you've just had 1 million downloads from your podcast, they wiped the account.
Of course they did.
You know.
Right. Right.
So
Podbean and YouTube and Google and Facebook and
Facebook,
everybody else.
I'm still permanently banned from YouTube and Facebook.
Right. And that was all maliciously done.
Yes.
I believe in order to silence voices like yours that were teaching people how to stay alive.
Yeah, it's true.
And so the only rational conclusion, I believe, but I want to hear your reaction, is that there was an organized real life conspiracy to achieve depopulation or extermination or mass death for whatever reasons. We can speculate on the reasons, but it's clear that that was an agenda.
It remains an agenda.
Yes.
It still is.
That's right.
You know, and they still are doing it. And then I've often gone, you know, a step beyond that and said, you know, if they're going to go to all this money, expense, power, manipulation, control to depopulate from the top down and kill off all the elderly people and people in our age groups and, you know, things like that, they want to make sure that those young people don't refill up the pot again.
Right.
So that's why, you know, the predilection of these lipid nanoparticles to testicles and ovaries. And so that they, you know, are really bad. And, you know, the lipid nanoparticle attraction to the ovaries is really, really bad. I mean, when little girls are born, their ovaries have approximately 3 million eggs in them, and that's all they're ever going to make. You know, unlike...
They have that many eggs?
When they're born.
Oh, really?
But by the time they get to... I learned this from one of the doctors that was on my show.
Okay.
And then an OB-GYN. And then by the time they get to 20 or, you know, 20, 25, when they want to start to have babies, that has gone down to about 300,000. And then by the time you get to menopause, it's gone down to, you know, maybe 500-600. Now think about this for a minute, Mike. If you start out with this, and it's unlike with men, with little boys, you know, they're constantly making sperm their whole life. And so that's a self-propagating organ. With ovaries, you get a finite amount.
That's right.
Now what happens when you're giving the COVID jabs to pregnant moms? And then you give them to you give it to 6-month-old baby girls. Now you've already taken their ovaries and made them incapacitated and cut down on the amount of eggs. And I said, so are these little girls going to be infertile from by the time, will they ever go through menopause? And the doctor who had told me this said, well, we don't know yet because not enough years have gone by. And if the little girls don't go through menopause and they don't start cycling with their estrogen and progesterone, the estrogen is so important for breast development, brain development, you know, bone development, all these different things. That will compromise their entire life, not just their ability to have children.
So what you're saying is that men can't have babies.
That too.
Okay. All jokes aside, wasn't there a recent study that talked about the actual percentage of destruction of eggs in women post-vaccine? I thought I saw something about that.
I don't know, but it would be kind of a theory because, you know, the shots have only been out for 5 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we, let's say the babies, they didn't start vaccinating babies right away. It was like probably 23.
Uh-huh.
So in the last 2 years, they've just now been giving the shots to pregnant women and to these little girls. There's not enough years that have gone by to actually know.
True.
What, by the time they get to be 12 or 13, when they should be going through puberty, whether they're going to go through puberty or not. But my contention with that it's not just about their ability to have babies. I mean, in a woman's body, in a female body, you know, the cycle of the estrogen and progesterone is so important for your bones, for your brain, for the breast development, for everything else that happens in you. I mean, it's so important for just the bones as they grow from forming bones to final bones. You need to have the estrogen and all that stuff. Well, if your ovaries don't work from the time you're six and they never work as you get older,
right,
it's going to be more compromising to those girls than just an inability to have children.
But this all seems to be, of course, part of the plan. And no one, and this leads me to your book, no one is being held accountable.
Exactly.
For any of this.
For any of it.
And I think you and I would both agree that some of what has been committed is clearly criminal behavior.
Well, yeah, and here's Fauci's still walking around.
Yeah.
Burks is walking around, and now she's a board member on Palantir. And
I saw that.
And you know, Echo Health is still around.
Yeah.
You know, all of these people that were criminally involved with this, there has been zero accountability for all this death, damage, carnage, and all these things that are happening.
And it seems like there's really no push to have accountability.
It seems
right
like
now,
not.
Right? Let's talk about your book. It's called Zero Accountability in a Failed System. I've got it up on Amazon right now on my screen. It's available at booksellers everywhere.
That's not true.
Oh.
It's only available at Amazon right now. Because the rest of the booksellers are not allowing us to go up on...
Barnes & Noble won't allow?
Mm-mm. We're having all kinds of trouble with them. And we want to get to other platforms because we know that a lot of people don't want to feed the beast. They don't want to buy from Amazon.
Right.
But right now, that's the only option.
Wow. So it's really Barnes and Ignoble, I think, is what they've become.
Seriously.
They don't want you to have the knowledge
of
what's in your book.
We don't have the wherewithal to have a shipping department to be able to ship them out on our own.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, the only place that you will be able to get it is through Amazon.
Dr. Suzanne Humphreys wrote the foreword.
Yes.
And she has also been an incredible champion in this space.
You know, it's so interesting when she wrote the foreword. She had written me a foreword, and then I added like 150 pages to the book. And I said, Suzanne, you're going to have to do this again. And she said, no, don't tell me. I said, so just focus on, you don't have to read the beginning, but just go to chapters maybe 12, 13, or 13, 14, and 15, because that's where the new really meaty stuff is. So she did that, and then she went back and read the whole thing again. And she said, you know, I really thought I knew this stuff. I really thought I knew about it.
Uh-huh.
And she and I are kind of like the vaccine queens. And she said, but I didn't know so much. And the way that you put this together, it really has taught me a lot. And so that's kind of a great testimonial from somebody that should, you know, kind of know all those different things.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've only glanced at your book. I can't wait to read it. I know I will learn a tremendous amount from what you've put together. But give us kind of an overview of the focus of the book. It's not just about the vaccines themselves.
Mm-mm.
It's about the entire infrastructure of how they are unfairly and unscientifically pushed on a population.
Well, and it's not just about vaccines either. There's a whole chapter in there about the weaponization of our healthcare system. I mean, that's sort of the subtitle of the book, how they weaponize public health. And so I start with the public health movement, you know, way back in the 1400s from Venice. You know, if anybody's followed my writings and things for a long time, they know I really like history because I believe that if you don't know how you got here, it really doesn't mean anything. And you're going to repeat those lessons from history.
Yeah.
So we talk about quarantine from that perspective and the weaponization of our health care system, which started primarily with Medicare. So I talk about that in the electronic medical records, the Healthy People the Healthy People program that started in 1980, which people in our sector, in the health freedom sector, really don't talk about that very much, about how they've weaponized that against us and used this thing that they call now the social determinants of health and how that all comes into play. So there's big sections about that, about the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, you know, that got released in 2021. So there, and then that leads up to the PREP Act. And then there's big sections in there about the PREP Act and about the Covered Countermeasure Injury Compensation Program. That's the CICP for short, that has, by a law that was created in 2005 that did not allow them to set up an injury table, to fund it, and to do anything for the 1.6 million people that filed VAERS reports.
Uh-huh.
And so the last time I looked, which was a couple of weeks ago, they had only adjudicated 40 claims through the CICP program. Two people got substantial claims. So if you consider those as outliers and average the other 38 people, that their average compensation was about $4,000.
For vaccine injury.
For all their vaccine injury.
Wow.
And they have not compensated a death. And there have been places along the way that even in the VAERS system that was set up in 1986, if someone dies, you know, they can go through the whole vaccine court system and all that stuff. The cap on a death payment is $250,000. And several times they have tried to initiate bills in through Congress to escalate that $250,000 from 1986 to the equivalent of 2025, which would be probably close to $500,000, which is more reasonable with inflation
and
all that stuff.
At least, I would think, yeah.
At least as far as that. And neither time had they done that, had they, has it got out of committee.
So it's clear to anyone paying attention that the pharmaceutical industry is steeped in multiple levels of fraud, financial fraud, research fraud, scientific fraud, government grant money, laundering, you know, everything that you can possibly think of. You know, there are graves of dead black children that Fauci, you know, experimented on, right? And it goes on and on. And also animals, the beagles and all, you know, we all know those stories. But this has been an industry, the pharmaceutical and the vaccine industry, steeped in not only horrific crimes against humanity and crimes against children, but also waging a very effective propaganda war where they own most of the doctors, the mainstream doctors. They own most of the medical journals in terms of influence, and they buy off the media. So, and of course, they bought their own legal immunity since 1986. How can this ever be shattered to where we can get back to some reasonable level of dialogue and legal liability for an industry that manufactures harmful and deadly products?
Well, I think the easiest path to that, the first thing that can be done is with the PREP Act. And I talk about this in the book, that they had filed, since the beginning of COVID, they had filed 13 amendments to extend it. And the last thing that Becerra, or one of the last things that Becerra did, who was the Xavier Becerra, who was the head of HHS before he left, one of the last things he did was extend it through December of 2029.
Uh-huh.
And that means that the EUA remains in place when there's no emergency,
right,
but the protections of the EUA, of being able to sue the pharmaceutical company for all this death and destruction, now maintains in place. So the first thing that could be done, and this is one of the things that Secretary Kennedy could do as the head of HHS, is just march right over there and pull out those paperworks and say, effective today, the PREP Act is no longer in place and the EUA protections provided by SAME end today. And then they could start with the lawsuits for all these people that have been injured. The second thing that they could do...
Well, and then also you could call for the arrest of Becerra because... You know, and Becerra is online complaining about RFK Jr. like crazy. Oh, everything, you know, any decision that even reduces Big Pharma's control a tiny percentage, you know, the entire pharmaceutical shilling medical system erupts with outrage. Like, children are going to die. No, I'm like, you're killing children.
Exactly. Exactly. You are killing children when you think that a fabricated virus or a mild virus that's just a rash and some diarrhea and comes and goes and leaves a lifetime immunity, that's not going to kill children.
Right.
You kill children with all of these deadly things that you inject in them.
They do. And I wish that Becerra would be on the arrest list along with Fauci and
Burks.
Yeah, Burks and Collins, I think, also.
And all the people at Echo Health.
Yep.
And all of those people. So after they get rid of the PrEP Act, the second thing that can be done is I think it needs to be a renovation of the 1986 Injury Compensation Act. I think we're wading into dangerous waters if we want to just repeal that.
Really?
Because we want to leave a carve out that we could still have VAERS. We could still have the injury compensation program. We could still have those things for people that are in the process along the way, because it's the only thing we got. And other countries around the world don't have that.
But the court, the injury compensation court system, is a clown show.
It is, and that's where some of the revisions need to happen inside of the Federal Court of Claims. You know, they're backed up 3 years, and that's another thing I talk about in the book, is they're backed up for 3 years because by when this law was passed in 1986, they only allowed so many special masters. I think there's 9, and they've got all of these cases. And that at that time, think about that, Mike. You know, at the time when that was passed, there were only 3 vaccines, MMR, DPT, and polio. And now kids get multiple doses of 17 different vaccines. So there's more injuries. When I first started doing this, they were getting maybe around 8,000 VAERS reports a year. Now, pre-COVID, it was up to between 30 and 35,000. And we know that the VAERS reports only capture about 10% of the injuries. And so, but the same number of judges that they call special masters are available for adjudication. And so the backlog has just gotten worse and worse and worse. And so there are things inside of that act that I think are good for the people, and we need to remove the protection from the pharmaceutical industry. You know, years and years ago, I used to be a consultant for a Fortune 200 company. This was like 2014, 15, around in there. And I remember they had like 7 different divisions inside of this company, and I got to be really good friends with the CEO. And he hated the vaccines and hated vaccine injury, and he said, you know, I would love it if the government would protect all of my products from liability and guarantee that I have 77,000 new customers per week that were forced to buy my products.
Right.
He said, what a bonanza, you know, and that's exactly what's happened with the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, of course, and it doesn't seem to be, you know, they're still pushing jabs. And even under Secretary Kennedy, and I want to talk to you about his work more in the second half of our interview, but even under him, there are still, you know, the FDA is still approving vaccines like this MNEX spike without any long-term clinical trials.
Without any studies
anything.
At all.
Yeah. So, and then we're promised that, well, we're going to do the science after we release it.
It's like,
and I'm thinking,
in what world does that happen?
In the world of idiocracy, that happens.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. If you were going to create a new gizmo for your car, and we don't know if when you drive 65 miles an hour, if it was going to break apart and cause a crash, but we're just going to release it and let you start using it. And then after the fact, we're going to count the number of accidents and determine whether or not it was safe.
Right, and we'll call that science.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, so that they're admittedly using Americans as medical experiments, guinea pigs, to find out. See, I condemned Secretary Kennedy on this point. I said famous quotes in history. Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass the bill to find out what's in it. And I said, Secretary Kennedy, we have to release the vaccine to find out if it's backed by science. Now, that's a paraphrase.
That's
good. He didn't say it exactly that.
But pretty close to that.
Pretty close to that. And, you know, look, I compliment Kennedy when I think he does the right things.
Me
and,
too.
And I'll criticize when I think he does something
wrong. Same here.
But that was clearly not... I responded to somebody on Twitter. They said, well, it's the gold standard of science. And I said, no, it's the turd standard of science. It's like a giant turd. I mean, to say... we're going to release it and then we'll do the studies? What is that?
And I think that I have a little issue with that, in that, you know, people are taking, you know, Secretary Kennedy, Bobby, that we've all known for, you know, 20 years as friend and colleague and things like that. So out of respect, we'll, you know, get his title, Secretary Kennedy. It's not him. It's Macari. And people are not calling him out at all.
Yeah, I've called him out some.
But not much.
Yeah.
He's the one. He's the head of the FDA.
Right, right.
He's the one who's, I don't know if he signs off or one of his people signs off, but they're the ones who release it. Now, truthfully, Secretary Kennedy could go to Macari and say, stop.
He could. Exactly. But,
so they're both complicit? They're both at fault?
Well, there are a lot of theories, obviously, about, you know, how much was already in play, how much effectiveness Secretary Kennedy can have. Let's save that discussion for the second part of this interview. But I was just pointing that out to show that this is still being pushed on the American people. And one of the big frustrations that we all have, those of us who are informed, like people who read your book, people who watch the show, is why can't we just stop killing children with vaccines today? Why can't we do that?
I think it's more complicated than the way it sounds, because those of us like you and me and a whole bunch of other people in our movement, like the Bollingers, like everybody who's been in this and steeped in it for I've been doing it for 25 years.
Yes.
We know it. We understand it. We see it as clearly as this microphone sitting here. We see it. But there's a big swath of the American public that just goes in and rolls up their sleeve. And they just think that, well, my doctor said it's okay. I got to vaccinate my babies. And so if suddenly it was gone, I mean, look at what happened when they just tried to, you know, I was really commending, you know, Secretary Kennedy, but when he was saying, okay, we're no longer going to advocate this for pregnant women and healthy children. And the internet blew up like, okay, you're going to give it to unhealthy children. That's okay. But not healthy children.
Right.
And so I wrote a piece on my Substack, which is drtenpenny.substack.com, that I said, you know, I get where your frustration is, but think about this. There's been one vaccine that has been pulled off the schedule, the RotaShield vaccine that has been pulled off the schedule, and that was in 1999.
Really?
There has been nothing else done in that schedule. The ACIP committee never saw a vaccine it didn't like.
Right.
It approves everything and every dose, and they just rubber stamp it along the way. And so I looked at it as that was sort of like a toe in the water. Let's move this forward a little bit and see what the response is.
Yeah.
And our side blew up bigger than the rest of the people did. You know?
Well, yeah.
Because we want it all done 100% now. And we can't see any reason why it can't be. Well, there's a lot, you know, you got those senators out there that want to, like, put your head on the chopping block. You know, we want to make sure that Trump doesn't fire him. We want to make sure that all these things are moving forward. We're getting the rest of the population educated to where, because if they don't listen to you and they don't listen to me and they don't listen to Alex and, you know, other people like that, that they don't know. They, you know, they got their two shots and their six boosters and they can't wait to get the next one because they think that the vaccines are safe, effective, necessary, and harmless. And it's just not true.
Yeah, it's just not true. And the thing is, when those people die, they can no longer speak about their realization in the afterlife.
It's right. Like,
oh, crap. I actually committed vaccine suicide, but now I can't tell anybody. You know?
It's true.
Imagine how frustrating that would be. You know, you're in the afterlife. You're like, man,
no,
the
stop,
vaccines did kill me.
Stop.
You know, you try to come back as a ghost and haunt people with an anti-vaccine message. You know, no, but I mean, this is a very serious matter. Obviously, that we're talking about, that the people who, even the people who are injured, they usually I've seen this. You've seen this in people. They will say, well, even though I almost died from this heart attack or whatever, good thing I took the vaccine or it would have been worse.
Exactly.
So that's a level of indoctrination or Stockholm syndrome.
Well, it's a multi-generational indoctrination that's been going on for 200 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of it is like, trust your doctor. You know, even the television commercials, ask your doctor if this is the right drug for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And all that stuff. And so ask your doctor. And then you look at the indoctrination of the physicians. I'm telling you, if the pharmaceutical industry wasn't so evil and so nefarious, it is the most brilliant business model in the world. You take the brightest minds out of college, you indoctrinate, you and convince them that they need to go $400,000 in debt to get a piece of paper that says that they're allowed to write prescriptions. And what they do is they write words on a piece of paper and they hand them out all day long, making me $400 billion a year. And I don't have to pay them. I don't have to pay off their school loans. I don't have to pay for their vacations. I don't have to pay them a stipend. I don't have to pay any workers' comp. I don't have to pay any of that stuff. They are out there writing words on a piece of paper, making me billions of dollars a year after they went $400,000 in debt to be entitled to be able to do that.
Right.
I mean, think about that, Mike. Think about what a brilliant business model that is.
Yeah, and they have no liability for the vaccines, right?
Or no liability for the drugs they write. If they write the wrong drug and people, you know, have an anaphylactic reaction, they die. So it's the malpractice insurance people over there that have to do that.
Well, and what I want to ask you about for part two, now we're going to wrap up this part one here, but I want to encourage our viewers to check out part two of this interview. I want to ask you about AI, because AI medicine is going to replace a lot of those doctors, since they're nothing but algorithms in human bodies anyway, you know, in the way they practice medicine, right? They're just algorithms. They're just elaborate vending machines. So that's easy to replace with AI.
Elaborate vending machines?
Yeah. They're just vending machines for big pharma, right? But that's easy to replace. But let me mention your book again, Zero, Accountability in a Failed System. There it is on Amazon. And also, we've got it on the desk. Can you show the desk shot there? There it is. Zero, Accountability in a Failed System. You know, right next to the incubation chamber of the chemtrails microbes, which are living. That's the reason there's a dome, is because it's alive. We can put it under the microscope if we dare. But anyway, that's the book, Zero, Accountability in a Failed System. Check it out. It's available apparently only on Amazon
right
at the
now moment.
It's banned at other places, I just
so
learned.
So far, at least they're not being very accommodating, and we're still working on it.
Okay.
Because we understand that not everybody wants to buy from Amazon, you know, but at this point in time, you can find it and read more about it on our website, which is drtenpenny.com/zero. You can find it there if you want to read more about it. And read more about what's in it, and see the table of contents and all those things. But you have to. But it will send you to Amazon to sell it, because we don't have the ability in our little company to be boxing up and selling out books.
That makes sense. And also, yeah. Aren't we working with you for another streaming event at Brighton University?
You are.
So that'll be coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know when that's going to be, but you know, folks, you can watch for it. So, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, everybody. Get her book, follow her website, follow her Substack, and she's also on X. What's your account name on X?
Busy Dr. T.
Busy Dr. T.
Yeah, Busy DRT.
Oh, really?
Dr. T.
Okay, all right.
It's
okay.
At Busy Dr. T. Yeah, that's my thing, my handle on X.
Okay, perfect. All right, so this is the conclusion of part one of our interview, and we'll post part two separately, so be sure to check that out as well. We'll be talking about AI, and also Dr. Tenpenny's feedback on Secretary Kennedy's recent decision to wipe clean the ACIP advisory board at the CDC and what happens next. So be sure to check out that interview next. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here of Brighteon.com. Take care. Thank you for supporting us at HealthRangerStore.com. And we've got a new batch of turmeric in stock now. After a long search, the supply chains are really becoming more difficult. And turmeric, as you know, is often contaminated with lead. So of course, we do mass spec elemental testing for lead, cadmium, you know, arsenic, mercury, and other elements. We found an ultra clean batch, and we have it available for you now. I have it on my desk. We've got turmeric root powder, certified organic, laboratory tested, identity confirmed, all that, E. coli tested, microbiology, you name it. We've got it all for you at healthrangerstore.com. We do not have turmeric tincture back in stock. We're working on that, but we do have the turmeric root powder. And as you know, I include turmeric root powder in my own smoothie, which is why it's orange. It's why my dental work turns orange, which freaks out the dental hygienist as well. But that's another story. Okay, so if you want really good, high quality, ultra clean turmeric root powder, we've got it now, healthrangerstore.com. We also have, yeah, there's the screen showing it to you. We also have astaxanthin. Astaxanthin, Hawaiian astaxanthin, we have it right now in stock. Of course, this is known as the king of carotenoids. This is a fat-soluble, super potent antioxidant, and it's got a multitude of uses and benefits and support mechanisms for human health. Athletes use it. Lots of people use it. This is also what turns the flesh of salmon slightly pink. That's actually the astaxanthin that they're getting from their dietary sources. And it's believed to help support the natural athleticism and the endurance and stamina of salmon. That's just one of the many benefits of the king of carotenoids. Now, astaxanthin is in a dark bottle because it's sensitive to light. But it's very potent. You only need either 2 or 4 milligrams per day. We've got that available for you right now, healthrangerstore.com. We also have a supply of NAC in stock, N-acetylcysteine, which of course helps support the body's normal detoxification process with outstanding liver support and glutathione and so much more. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. Turmeric root powder, astaxanthin capsules, as well as NAC, all in stock right now, plus hundreds of other items that are also certified organic, laboratory tested, non-GMO, and we don't use synthetic, you know, colors, fragrances, fillers, garbage, none of that stuff, nothing like that. Ultra clean products for home, for health, for personal care, for nutrition, and also for long-term food storage, for emergency preparedness. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. And thank you for your support. We appreciate you very much. We couldn't do this without you. Thanks for watching. Take care.